In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. We continue to examine the unregulated weather control technologies and climate engineering operations conducted in real time, and also the use of electromagnetic devices and microwave transmission antenna systems that saturate communities in unhealthy radiation without public consent. There are people in think tanks designing your future. They would like you to think in a scarcity mindset, to live in an ultra-small living space, to be bathed in microwave radiation, to accept being spied on, not only by your personal digital communication device, but also by your appliances. As human populations begin to increase in awareness, it's important that you're quietly plugged into a virtual reality machine. President Obama accelerated geoengineering programs, even though 193 nations called for a ban when he passed Senate Bill 601, Weather Mitigation Research Authorization Act of 2009. In April 2017, H.R. 353 was passed by the Trump administration, continuing geoengineering programs nationally, now called Weather Research and Space Weather Research, which is funded through 2020. In response, the Geoengineering Act of 2017, H6011, was co-authored by Rosalind Peterson with the Agriculture Defense Coalition.org and Susan Clark. It was introduced by Representative Justin Price in Rhode Island State. It's a national and international legislative initiative to end the programs that use technology to artificially manipulate the Earth's natural systems, such as spraying atmospheric aerosols and controlling weather with electromagnetics. The full text of that bill is on inothernewsradio.com. In September 2017, Rhode Island's legislation commissioned a study on geoengineering based on H6011. Rhode Island is one of the first states to examine how atmospheric modification programs known as geoengineering are affecting the Earth. A 5-member committee will make recommendations for licensing illegal operations such as solar radiation management, ocean fertilization, and cloud cover protection and cloud whitening. The House Commission plans to submit its report by April 2, 2018. You may be thinking, well, this is hopeful, but this action is playing their game, and it's seriously behind the curve, as normalized real-time climate engineering is taking a massive toll right now. Well, that's true, but maybe these steps are also what's needed to reshape a proper environment fit for healthy human communities. Climate engineering patents also reveal the use of electromagnetics and microwave energy to manipulate the atmosphere. However, on the ground, chronic pulsing microwave radiation fields have also blanketed homes, workspaces, and schools. Within the last 2 years, an increase in doctors and scientists have gone public sharing decades-old evidence that the health effects from microwave radiation fields related to cell phones, microwave antenna clusters, are worse than you may realize. With the advent of what's known as 5G microwave networks, a heavier presence of small wireless neighborhood microwave repeater antennas are now being installed in suburbs, rural areas, and making their way into cities. This is it. Government agencies and corporations will be bankrolling 5G networks because of the Agenda 21, 2030, whatever you want to call it, 5G plan to supply data to self-driving cars, appliances, and the so-called Internet of Things. Our guest, Jolie Diane, joins us to talk more about these topics. She's an environmental and human health advocate, a researcher, and director at Zero Geoengineering and Zero 5G. Jolie, welcome to Another News.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, could you please tell listeners about your organization, Zero Geoengineering and Zero 5G?
Zero Geoengineering and Zero 5G are basically designed to be educational tools and sources of information for people to understand the technology of geoengineering and 5G technology And then further, what to do about it, you know, how we can counter and correct this invasive technology. The sites are filled with basically source documents that people can go through and do some research. We're pretty careful not to add anything that's speculative in nature. We try to stay with just the facts, just the science, everything that's known and established with science and so forth.
So listeners have some background of your work. There's something called the Geoengineering Act of 2017. Some of the listeners may not be familiar with that. Could you tell us what that is?
Sure. The Geoengineering Act of 2017 is a bill that was introduced in Rhode Island by Representative Justin Price this past year in March. The bill is basically a mechanism to regulate and shut down dangerous geoengineering programs. Basically, what the document does is define geoengineering, and it's a real document that goes through and includes 10 agencies from the state in order to be able to regulate this. And when we say regulate, we don't mean, oh, come in and do geoengineering. It's quite the opposite. It's like the regulation system we have with our cars, and where you come in and you have to provide information like who you are, your insurance. You have to prove that your vehicle is safe and not polluting. It was written by Roslyn Peterson. Many of your listeners may be familiar with Roslyn. She's an expert in weather modification and geoengineering and agriculture. Her site is agriculturedefensecoalition.org, and I would encourage people to go there and research. Roslyn Peterson was a keynote speaker at the UN regarding these programs back in 2007. And she has been tirelessly working and advocating to get legislation introduced so that we can start getting public oversight and shut down these programs. Basically, H-6011, which is the Geoengineering Act, introduced in Rhode Island, it passed through the first committee, the Natural Resources Committee, and now it's in a special study commission to study the regulatory process and the bill. So that the representatives can understand it and it can get out on the floor and get voted on. Hopefully we'll get it passed there. But the bill is designed by Ms. Peterson to be a template and model for other states so that we can simply adapt the legislation to each state and even different nations. In fact, we're working internationally, as you may know, and currently we have colleagues working with an MP in the UK Parliament. So what we're trying to do is take this model from Rhode Island and apply it everywhere, because what we're talking about basically is freedom. This invasive technology is literally a prison for everyone because you can't escape it.
Jolie, can you talk about the process that Rhode Island went through to examine H.R. 6011, why they even looked at it, and what happened from there?
It's really interesting, this process of creating legislation to become a law. And so what happened was Representative Price, this is the second time he's introduced legislation. But basically it started because Representative Price is very much interested in this issue and bringing a voice for the people to be able to counter this technology. So because of him, we were able to connect with Roslyn Peterson, who has been very active in getting a legislative initiative going in the United States. And she wrote the document, and then it went through the process of the legal counsel in Rhode Island. Representative Price introduced the bill in March, and it was introduced into the Natural Resources Committee. The bill was passed through that committee, and then the vote was to establish a special study commission, because when they want a bill to pass, apparently, they want it to go in a study commission so that they can find out what it's about. And honestly, this information is foreign to most of our representatives, and most people actually are not really up to speed with weather modification science. right now, where we are with the bill is it's in this special study commission, which will be over a period of months. I'm not sure. They just got back into session in Rhode Island. And so it's basically in the process. And so once it goes through the commission, then it will be introduced out onto the House floor where it will be voted on. And, of course, we obviously want to push as hard as we can to make sure that it is passed. So it's going through the process in Rhode Island, and what we wanted to do at Zero Geoengineering was to make it possible for people to do this in other states because so many people are interested in this issue. And so that's what we're doing. We're basically using the Rhode Island model where we meet with state representatives who will sponsor our bill or introduce our bill onto the House floor in the state. And the reason that we're doing this at the state level, and this is kind of a concept that's important for people to understand, because a lot of people are like, well, this is a federal issue. We have to do something at the federal level. But as you'll see, and as your listeners will learn, the federal level is where they're introducing geoengineering and actually expanding the programs. And so because of that, we're coming up at the state level to counter and say no and correct it. Because what's happened with weather modification is that it's been discussed outside the framework of our representatives here in our country and at the international level in these conferences where the public is not invited. And so that's what our bill is for, is to come into the conversation of global geoengineering governance and create a very strict set of regulations where we're going to be able to, just like in the automotive industry, you have to check in with your vehicle. We have to find out what it is, what kind of pollution you have going on, what are you doing? You know, so again, we're just laying the framework so that we can regulate this industry.
The prospects here are exciting in terms of building awareness. We've been talking about this issue on the show for a number of years now, and I'm sure listeners are saying to themselves, well, you're playing their game by presenting this bill. It's also assuming in the bill that it's not happening in real time. What do you say to people who would bring that topic up?
Well, I would say that the reason that we have so many problems is that we have remained absent from the process of lawmaking and public oversight. And what's happened is we have the priorities that we have. In other words, the federal government is actually expanding geoengineering, you know, because we haven't been a part of the process. And I would say that's not just true in geoengineering, but the problems that we have, the anti-war movement has been missing in this fight. The problems that we have are because we have been missing from the process. And the people are the fourth branch of government. We can't just expect to go and vote every 4 years. Problems are much deeper than that. So there's plenty of lobbyists lobbying for geoengineering right now. Plenty. There's hundreds. Okay, but there are not very many of us who are showing up to say, actually, no, we do not want you to vote for geoengineering.
Jolie, you've been traveling a lot lately and speaking with various politicians, such as senators and legislators. What is your sense of their knowledge of the real-time climate engineering versus the false narrative that it's in a proposal stage?
Jeff, that's a great question. Basically, what we are finding is that these legislators have no idea about it. They are uneducated about this topic. And I think that part of the reason is there's been so much confusion about the issue and that this issue has been relegated basically to conspiracy. So what we're doing is we're bringing it back into, actually, this is established science, cloud seeding, weather modification, geoengineering, solar geoengineering. These are all terms that have a long track record and a paper trail. And we're able to brief these legislators and show them why we need strong regulations put in place for these programs. And you're right. There is the language is so important, how these programs have been presented to us and are continue to be presented to us is as if it's going to happen sometime in the future. And it's a, you know, some sort of a future tense activity when, as you know, and I know very well, these programs are active. It's a very tricky situation that we're in because, again, we also have the deep state very much as the driver of geoengineering and weather modification research and development. And that's a picture that has been going on for decades and decades. It's just been hidden very well. If you do look, you can find the appropriations for these programs for cloud seeding, weather modification. They're in with the big players, NOAA, NASA, Department of Defense. There's just a huge budget for it.
My understanding from what you said is that most of them do not know. And I would follow up and say, do you think they're liars?
See, the thing about it is, I don't know if they're liars or they're not liars. Obviously, you know, politicians don't always tell the truth. But again, I would put the emphasis on what is our role here? Because it's easy to say, you know, they're a liar, but where is our role and what are we supposed to be doing? The goal here is to make sure that we get regulations in place and prohibition in place for dangerous and hazardous programs. And I think the fact that we have been missing in action from our halls of government at the state level, because we're countering the federal programs at the state level, the 10th Amendment, because the federal can't make any law that's going to trump our laws. No matter what they say, the state and the people have the power. And I think that that's what we have to do is come back and show up in these offices in our suits, with our documents, with our facts. And it is, we have a very strong case. And it's different, of course, in each state. And it is very exciting. There are people in the different states now showing up, and we're building small teams. These teams are calling and making appointments with and getting meetings with state representatives and state senators. And we're going in and briefing them with a presentation. We have the legislative initiative, and we're also working to get college professors and university professors from the different states to give us testimony or written support that we can also use to get the legislation introduced and passed.
I think this does need to happen to get more and more people participating in the process of regulating very dangerous operations. The other aspect is there are senators in place right now that have investments or connections to, through their families, to the companies and the agencies and corporations such as Raytheon that are involved in geoengineering operations. So some of these politicians have a vested interest in the very topic, so they're likely not to do anything. I'm not saying that's all of them, of course, but there are some like that.
Well, I think you bring up a very good point, Jeff, and we have to make the distinction here between federal and state. The federal representatives and senators, and you can go to the Zero Geoengineering site, but the Take Action, you know, we have a link there that you can see the testimony and the hearing from the recent geoengineering hearings in Congress in November. And yes, you're absolutely right. These people, and they don't hide it. They want to spray aerosols. That's what they say. That's in their testimony. So people need to tune in. They've been, you know, some people have been trying to tune out this issue. But if you're an environmentalist, you know, and you have family and stuff, you need to check in about this issue of weather modification. We know for sure that these programs are happening. We need to be part of the solution to get in the way at the state level. And that's how we're countering it, okay? So we have the federal level that they're introducing these programs, they're expanding geoengineering. President Trump signed H.R. 353 in April, which gives a budget for these weather research programs through 2020. So we have an administration that's not only pushing geoengineering, but they're also pushing the 5G. I mean, again, let's look at these as technologies, polluting technologies. And that's how we're going to take them down, because we already have strong regulations in the United States, regardless of who's in the White House. We have strong regulations, and we have already come to terms with the fact that sulfur dioxide is a contaminant, hazardous contaminant, and it was taken out of diesel fuel in every state in 2010. So that's one of the chief components and agents of geoengineering aerosol injection. And again, so we haven't even had the conversation here. That's what we're doing at the state level. We're bringing our legislation there so that we're going to be getting in this conversation finally. And they can say, well, you know, it might happen and, you know, proposed geoengineering. Well, great. We're going to regulate proposed geoengineering too. So that way you have to come and fill out an application just like everybody else. And you're going to have to go through the process of getting a license to do geoengineering if you get one at all. That's what the program is for, to put in place, not so that you can do more geoengineering, but so you can't do more geoengineering. And I would just like to bring up an important point that many people are unaware of, that there were four states in the United States in the 1960s that had a ban on cloud seeding. And those states were Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Maryland, and Illinois. And so that's already something that's in the book that was established. And I just would like to read you a little bit from the Pennsylvania document, which is law in Pennsylvania in 1967. Again, these laws have expired because the oversight went from Department of Agriculture to Department of Defense. This was 1967, weather modification regulating rainmaking, and the director shall, by regulation, establish standards and instructions to govern the carrying out of research and development or commercial operations in weather modification. And it goes on, government and armed forces projects within the province of this statute must meet all the requirements of this act. No nucleating agent may be used in concentrations dangerous to man or causes environmental pollution as determined by the State Department of Health. Enforcement of this, in order to enforce the provisions of this act, the Pennsylvania State Police shall, on request of the board, assign at least one trooper and one investigator to an area where unlawful cloud seeding is suspected. If such police request the same, the Pennsylvania Aeronautics Commission shall assign an airplane and pilot. Air samples shall be taken by the Pennsylvania Air Pollution Commission if requested by the state police of the board. For such enforcement purposes, the State Department of Health shall furnish such technical services as the board may request. Nothing contained in this act shall be construed to authorize the suppression of lightning. So that's very, very important to know because, and especially now as we are approaching some of the representatives in Pennsylvania, to be honest, none of them knew about this. Okay, so you can see, if we don't know history, we're doomed to repeat the same mistakes over and over. I'd like to read a quote from a Pennsylvania representative in 1967. He was one of the sponsors of the bill, and he said cloud seeding involves silver iodide, and silver iodide, Mr. Speaker, is highly poisonous. AGI used in seeding falls everywhere, on trees, in vegetation, roofs, people, and its synergistic action joins with motor exhaust to become lead iodide. Dry ice, CO2, also used in seeding, is equally dangerous, disrupting the entire ecology of the planet. And that was in 1967.
Thanks for reading those pieces of legislation in that quote. It's important to put in context. Jolie, what are your thoughts on the global warming climate change organizations that ignore the realities of real-time climate engineering, and has that impeded the activism for anti-geoengineering?
That's a great question. basically, the climate change is a very interesting phenomenon. Because, again, it's the use of language to deceive on a massive scale. Okay, because we all know that the nature of the climate is to change. That's always the nature of the climate. There's nothing new there. The way it's been used since President Johnson is as a marketing tool in order to be able to make excuses to experiment with weather modification. They say, oh, well, the climate is this. We're going to have to mitigate. We're going to have to do weather modification. So it's just smoke and mirrors, basically, to be able to do the programs. And a lot of the larger organizations, unfortunately, are part of this gravy train, if you will, and they're just furthering the research. Now, again, if you go deeper, you know that this activity, they're actually trying to terraform the planet. And there we see the bigger 911 of weather modification, because it was Johnson who initiated these programs in the United States after the public execution of Kennedy. And, you know, we've never recovered from that in the United States. And I think now we're starting to sort our way out of what happened. But again, history is so vital for us to understand. And it's also vital to understand that in Maryland, right around this time in the 1960s, 1965, 1967, the farmers in Maryland and Pennsylvania and Virginia were irate about the cloud seeding because they were convinced that it was causing drought. Okay, so who would know better about the climate than the farmers? And again, Vietnam was where weather modification was perfected. You got your Project Popeye. Okay, so we did terrible crimes with weather modification where we didn't ask the Vietnamese, and we just went in there and did weather modification and dumped Agent Orange. You're talking Monsanto here. Okay, that's a company that shouldn't be existing, but they do, and they're very powerful. So again, history is so important for us to understand the context of what's happening now. And from that 911, you know, it's not just the infrastructure of the weather modification. Now, as you know, and your listeners probably know, we're dealing with the infrastructure of 5G and the smart meter infrastructure, which is, again, if you're the enemy of America, how are you going to take them down? Well, you got to get inside, and you got to try to cause harm and disruption in the infrastructures. And, you know, you look at the country now, and you can see we are definitely under attack. The weather modification aspect provides such plausible deniability, you can't point the finger and say, they did it, they did it. And that's why, you know, there was a treaty, the ENMOD Treaty in 1978, that the United States signed by 1980, that said that they wouldn't use weather modification for war or military purposes. But, you know, you see that it's just gotten out of control, and now it's a huge industry. So that's, again, why we're taking such a strong stand, state by state, and Rhode Island was first to get in here and get in the conversation, because like we were saying earlier, hardly anyone knows about weather modification science or history. And another really good site for your listeners would be to go to weathermodificationhistory.com, and you can just find so much information there. And again, it is very important for us to learn about weather modification and then look up, look in the environment and see that it's happening. And then further, we have to shut it down. So again, it's a very, very important topic. I'm so happy that you're looking at this, Jeff.
On the show, we've been going since 2007, talking about this. I met Rosalind Peterson in person in San Jose, California, at a NASA Ames Geoengineering Conference. Her and Tom Slate were there. We met David Keith, Ken Caldera, and Lowell Wood. As a lot of the other scientists do, they hedge their tone with, well, we don't think it's a good idea, but we need to be prepared if we need to use it.
Yeah, it is. It's very true. They're corporate sponsored. And by the way, David Keith is not an American citizen. Furthermore, the Nuremberg Code provided a very clear example of scientists don't have the right to experiment without the permission and informed consent of the people that will be involved. This is a very huge crime that's going on with the weather modification. All these people, as you said, they're saying, you know, we shouldn't do this, but we might have to. But again, it's not up to them to decide. And here's where our legislation and the initiative is so important, because it's not up for the scientists to decide if they want to do this or that. If we're free people, and every person on this planet deserves to be a free human being, then we can't have that with geoengineering. Because what it is it's an invasive technology where we don't have the choice not to breathe. And these methods that they are applying, again, there's no informed consent. And the scientists at the Nuremberg trial did hang for those crimes. So David Keith and Ken Caldera and all of them who have been pushing this type of science, and they have been promoting it, well, they should be brought to justice when the time comes. Because, again, you don't have the right to do these experiments. These are experiments. And even David Keith said this is not something that's going to fix anything. It's not a fix. It's just to mask the problem. Okay, so again, think of the law on the ground. If someone came over to your house and started spraying aerosol in your house, you could call the police, because no one can come in there and start generating pollution or do something harmful like that. Well, why on earth doesn't this apply to this situation? Because it does apply. It very much applies, although we just have not had a mechanism to regulate the industry. The industry has been hidden in research and development in the CIA and the military. So that's, you know, it's a good thing right now that this issue is coming out and it's so mainstream. If people check out the weather right now, they can see that they're with these extremes right now, this is not regular weather. This is engineered weather. We're not seeing any real weather anymore.
The listeners of the station, some of the affiliate stations that carry the show, are definitely tuned in to this topic and see it a lot more clearly than before. Jolie, what are your thoughts on the evidence brought forth by a frequent guest on the show, Dr. J. Marvin Herndon? We were talking about the aerosol operations and what they're spraying in the upper atmosphere. It was showing to him from his test, showing a chemical signature of coal fly ash that was in the water and soil.
Yeah, I think Dr. Herndon has done amazing work. It does show that what goes up comes down. And we're very fortunate to have the efforts of Dr. Herndon. We're just collecting the data. You know, we're just seeing what has basically been described in all of the university materials and the literature that we're seeing about weather modification. And so when we get scientists like Dr. Herndon weighing in on this, I think it does a world of good for our cause. Because, again, what we're trying to focus on here is established and known science. And what we're bringing up is the fact that science is a rigorous and ongoing investigation. And those are Dr. Herndon's words. And when you have a situation where you have a lot of scientists just coming to agreement and trying to find consensus, that's not science. When a lot of scientists just agree with each other, that's not science. What is science is what Dr. Herndon's doing and other scientists, Clifford Carnicum, you're taking actual analysis. And that's what it is. And so when people try to dismiss findings and just saying, well, the science is settled because the scientists agree, well, that's not science. That's absolutely not science. If you want to dispute the findings, then what you need to do is do your own test and then come back to us with some facts. And that's how we're trying to flip this frame, because the framework has been designed to kind of cripple us all. And so what we're trying to do is take the information that we get from Dr. Herndon and other lab reports that we have and make them very much the crux of the issue, which is if they're not doing geoengineering, then we wouldn't find any of this in the rain, would we?
Definitely not. The implication also is the scrubbers in the smokestacks of coal-fired power plants. That material is very expensive to dispose of, he was pointing out, and it's likely that they could be just dumping it into the upper atmosphere. This is a method that's often used of getting rid of sodium fluoride from the phosphate industries and other industries that generate sodium fluoride as an industrial waste. They dispose of it through the drinking water. That we do know. That's just the implication there. We don't have to talk about that any further.
Well, yeah, I would like to, actually, because I think it's a critical point, because mostly in weather modification and geoengineering, we're always talking about the aerosols. But what you just brought up is a critical point. Because when we talk about fossil fuel plants, we immediately think, oh, it's the fossil fuels, and it's, yes, it's coal fire. But listen to this. Here's a patent for weather modification. It's called Method for Weather Modification and Vapor Generator for Weather Modification. And it's a nuclear fission reactor, and it's used as a heat source. And what it does is it generates literally millions of tons of water vapor, which, by the way, is a greenhouse gas. But see, these coal fire plants that we're looking at are part of weather modification. And that's the missing piece that we don't often look at with these programs, is that they have to generate a lot of water in the air, and then they see the cloud, or what they call the man-made cloud. So, again, if you go to zerogeoengineering.com, we have some patents up about this, but we have to look at the bigger picture when it comes to this. And you're right. They do add all kinds of contaminants to that. Because remember, water vapor is invisible. So whatever we're seeing up there is not water vapor. It's either frozen water with a nucleating agent or some kind of agent in there so that it sticks to the molecule. And it holds together. That's what, in the aerosol dispersal, they want the aerosols to expand and persist in the atmosphere. Now, water vapor won't do that, because pure water vapor, you can't see it. Like when you're walking down the street, and I think you said this yesterday when we spoke, if the water vapor theory was true, then you would see water vapor on a cold day in a mile after you. But that's not true, because the laws of physics state that water vapor is invisible. Okay, so that's a really key factor, and that's why when you call your representatives and they say, oh, dear, it's just water vapor in the air, don't worry, that's false. It's an ice nucleating agent. But see, people, we're getting more familiar on science, and we have to acknowledge that our representatives and politicians, they don't know a thing about science either. So we're all getting up to speed. We're all just, you know, trying to get educated, and it's a process. But at the end of the process, then you can see that, well, okay, the message is climate change is not our fault. The breathers did not do this. Climate change is a result of weather modification and geoengineering over decades. And that's not because I think it's true. It's because we're looking at the paper trail. We're looking at the patents. Okay, so it's really important on distinction, and I'm really glad you brought that up about the water vapor from the fossil fuels, because that's a big piece. You could also go to Weather Wars 101, and he does a remarkable job at showing you how they make the weather. And water vapor generation is a big part of it. And I'll tell you, you know, if you think about all the hurricanes that we've had and all the programs that there are to research hurricanes, and, you know, there was cloud seeding done in Florida and in Texas before those big hurricanes. I mean, come on. This is the problem. That's why we need our regulation system. Because we're going to, like, first of all, there's so many programs going on. Nobody knows who's doing what. And every single program has an impact on the state next to it and on you know, the countries around it. So again, this activity is not a democratic activity. It's been going on, and the people have had absolutely no voice and no way to counter it and correct it. And so that's what we're attempting to do right now with this state-led initiative. And I hope everybody will go to zerogeoengineering.com and check in and get started with us on it. You can go read the Rhode Island document. It's very much a starting place. It's not the finish. So there's plenty of room for improving the bill, you know, but basically it just needs people. We can't do it without people. If you don't live in the district, we can't even go visit the representative. So it's a very specific method, but we are making progress, and I'm just very grateful for all of the people who have been doing so much research, and just they're so dedicated and, you know, like you, they just haven't stopped. And I think that we're going to really crush it this year. I hope so.
Yes, I hope so as well. And if communities can beat back the imposed interference and cognitive dissonance to organize against these designs being carried out, there might be a chance of achieving a really meaningful consensus. To switch gears, Jolie, can we talk about your work in highlighting the crossover of technology with electromagnetics used in climate engineering and the microwave wireless technology?
Absolutely. And that's so important because, again, we're looking at these industries and technologies in terms of emissions, and we're looking at it in terms of pollution. And so when I started looking at geoengineering, it's such advanced science. It just took a really long time. I'm still, you know, we're all really learning. But what I discovered was that I learned from the other researchers that there's an ionizing process, which means ionizing the atmosphere with microwave radiation in order to cause certain changes in the climate. This is like patents for weather modification. And so that puts in a whole different level, because I'm sure a lot of your listeners have seen a lot of towers and antennas going up everywhere on the towers and just everywhere on top of buildings. This is part of the wireless communications infrastructure. And this is something that's very important and also invasive technology. Because like with the geoengineering aerosols, you know, you can't avoid them. And like with the wireless infrastructure with our smart meters, we can't avoid them. You know, there's nothing we can do. We can, you know, there's a few things that we can do, you know, in terms of neutralizing these impacts. But basically, this technology is just spewing out. And so what we did in our bill was we defined electromagnetism as an air contaminant. And so that's how we hooked it in there, and that's how we're hoping to go on offense against 5G this year. Because the World Health Organization, as you probably know, has defined electromagnetism as a class 2 carcinogen, which means it's like smoking. And, you know, like they didn't put any regulations on smoking until 90 years it took them. How many people had to die and suffer because they didn't regulate something that they knew that was important? And so that's why with this issue with 5G and wireless infrastructure, smart meter, you know, that is something that we need to shut down. It's like it's either the technology or us.
Would you please explain to listeners what the 5G network is and why it's important to know about this level of radiation that's coming very quickly into all of our environments?
Yes, thank you, Jeff. First of all, I think everyone should go to whatis5g.info. That's a great resource. And basically, 5G is an abbreviation for fifth generation wireless technology. And the wireless telecom industry is aggressively working to get small cell antennas on nearly every lamppost and utility post around the country, potentially beaming hazardous radiation next to or into our homes 24/7. Dr. Ronald M. Powell, PhD, says 5G would irradiate everyone, including the most vulnerable to harm from radio frequency radiation, pregnant women, unborn children, young children, teenagers, men of reproductive age, the elderly, the disabled, and the chronically ill. So this technology is used for our wireless devices and for this new communication system that's coming called the Internet of Things. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of it, but I do think it would need explaining because, in fact, why don't we hear a clip, a short clip from FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler. Let's hear what he says about the 5G build-out.
The big game changer is that 5G will use much higher frequency bands than previously thought viable for mobile broadband and other applications. Such millimeter wave signals have physical properties that are both a limitation and a strength. They tend to travel best in narrow and straight lines, and they do not go through physical objects as well. This means that very narrow signals in an urban environment tend to bounce around buildings and other obstacles, making it difficult to connect to a moving point. But brilliant engineers have developed new antennas that can aim and amplify signals, coupled with sophisticated processing that allows a moving device to pick up all of the signals that are bouncing around and create one coherent connection. Now, to make this work, the 5G build-out is going to be very infrastructure intensive, requiring massive deployment of small cells. It is the capacity to use this new capability that will determine what our future looks like. Yes, 5G will connect the Internet of Everything. If something can be connected, it will be connected in a 5G world. But with the predictions of hundreds of billions of microchips connected in products from pill bottles to plant waterers, you can be sure of only one thing. The biggest Internet of Things application has yet to be imagined. Yes, 5G will connect the unconnected and compete with the uncompetitive. Millions of Americans can't access high-speed connectivity because it's too costly to run the fiber to the home. Verizon CEO Lowell McAdam has begun speaking lately about using 5G connectivity to expand high-speed broadband service to rural areas. Unlike some countries, we do not believe that we should spend the next couple of years studying what 5G should be or how it should operate and how to allocate spectrum based on those assumptions. Like the examples I gave earlier, the future has a way of inventing itself. Turning innovators loose is far preferable to expecting committees and regulators to define the future.
That was a clip from a speech from FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler discussing 5G. Now, you were talking about the Internet of Things. Jolie, can you tell listeners what that is?
Yes, the Internet of Things is basically the infrastructure and design for all of our wireless technologies. What they're saying is it's higher capacity for data transmissions to carry the massive amount of data that will be needed for this infrastructure. They're thinking about driverless cars, faster internet streaming. Basically, they're trying to sell it like that, like you need faster technology. What has not been looked at is the potential health impacts. And what that's going to mean for not just us, but for the pollinators and the bees, you know, we know that 3G and 4G have had a devastating impact to our pollinators. And there are studies coming out showing that these fields interrupt the natural systems and natural frequencies that our pollinators depend on. The 5G and the Internet of Things is this infrastructure that is essentially bathing the population in this microwave radiation. And again, this is why we have to come out so hard and fight this, I would encourage all of your listeners to go check out the In Power movement, because they have set up templates and a way for us to counter and bring notice of liability to those who are in some way involved in allowing these infrastructures to get rolled out. So that could be your city council, that could be your state representatives. You know, again, this is where people have the information from In Power movement or Take Back Your Power, and that's like a ball that you can pick up and run with. And I encourage everyone to do that, to get educated and then just take the information that they have at these sites and go use it, because it's just, it's fact-based and it's something that you can do right away. You don't have to wait. And I can't even stress the importance of people checking in and looking at this technology and opposing it and countering it. I have been able to travel around the country. I was in Colorado a couple months ago. I've been up the coast, on the East Coast and the West Coast. And I'll tell you, America looks like it is wired for a bomb. There is wiring on telephone poles that is totally unsustainable. They're just adding and adding and adding stuff on there. And the stuff that is on the telephone poles is emitting microwave radiation. So it's an industry that should be subject, like any other industry, to safety code. And it is not right now, and that's why the fight is on. The federal government, and as you showed earlier, the FCC chairman, they're intent on pushing the 5G because they're saying that that's going to make America, you know, the leader in technology, and we have to do this. We have to realize that this is part of the federal communication system. This is the wiring infrastructure. And what's also important to note is that these programs were meant to be a massive surveillance tool and also used for mind control. You know, so we have to go back and look at the history of microwave radiation, and everything has a history. So it's easy to kind of find out how we got here. And it's worth it to for everyone to find out so that we can undo this and correct it.
Jolie, thank you for going into some of that detail on the coming rollout of 5G networks. And it looks like they want to hit some deadline of 2019 with the 5G wireless. This fifth generation wireless system, the frequency band, I understand, is from 3 gigahertz to 300 gigahertz. And because the signal will not go through obstacles, they need multiple repeater antennas. So every two houses, something like that, will be a repeater antenna, and it will look like a cylinder in some cases. So that's what these things will look like, but it will be broadcasting massive amounts of microwave radiation. And listeners, remember, radiation is cumulative in the body, just like sodium fluoride, the industrial waste product added to your drinking water. Radiation, it's cumulative, and not everyone experiences physical symptoms when exposed to wireless radiation. However, every person is physiologically affected. You're organizing ways to regulate this with your website, 05G.com. Tell listeners what that site is about, please.
Okay. Well, I'm very much lining up with others who are on the front lines of this fight. I'm relatively new to 5G, but I started, you know, we started the 05G.com just so people could go and get educated about it. And what we have up there, you can go and connect to different sites that have actions that they're doing. There's a couple of sites that are really good. Right now we have a letter that you can write to members of Congress, because these are very much coming out from the federal level. Basically, getting involved, sending letters, calling up your reps. The numbers are all on here, 05G.com, for the take action. We're just trying to give people opportunities to get involved in the discussion so that we can start changing it. Now, we're on defense from this 5G. I mean, honestly, everybody who can go look at their telephone poles can see that, you know, this infrastructure is being rolled out or has been rolled out. There's like these little black boxes with lots of wiring hanging off. There are containers and structures, small structures. It's just very hideous. This was something rolled out by Bill Clinton for the Telecommunications Act in 1996. They made it so that the telecommunications industry wouldn't be regulated. They could put up these towers anywhere they wanted, and you couldn't dispute them based on any health or environmental concerns. And so that was a big problem there. That's a big part of the 911, because, look, if you're an enemy of the United States, how do you want to take it down? You want to break down the infrastructure. Well, how do you do that? Well, you can ruin it, terraform it by putting out massive amounts of electromagnetics, or you can dump a bunch of aerosols on it and set it on fire like they did in California. I mean, they've had cloud seeding programs there for years, legalized. Again, so we're digging our way out of this mess that was left to us by previous generations. You know, not that it was their fault, because I think that there's so much deception involved and corruption involved. But basically, our job right now, I think, is to educate ourselves and help educate one another, and then pick up the ball and run with it where there's an opportunity. Right now, you can contact your representatives, and, you know, people say, well, they're part of the problem. Well, yeah, they are, but we've been missing. Imagine if millions of us got on our suits and cleaned ourselves up and got our documents together. And, I mean, that's going to make a big difference. If you walk into these offices and you have your dressed for the occasion, as, you know, as a legal person would be, and you have your facts together, and you know what you're fighting for. What are we fighting for? Cleaner environment, clean air, clean water, health and safety. Well, we have to make this an issue in the houses of government where they're creating the policies and where, more importantly, they're spending the money. So I think that that's the new way of activism, where we are taking on the role of self-governance and stop leaving that role for somebody to govern us. You know, we're smart enough on this planet, and we have enough wisdom and understanding that we can work out these problems together. You know, we don't need to follow the leader anymore. That is an outdated method. You know, we need to help each other and empower one another, and that's very much what we're trying to do with zero geoengineering and zero 5G, is kind of change up the frame and give people an opportunity to take back their power, be part of the process to correct this.
Sholi Diane, very empowering words, and I really appreciate you being on the show. Sholi is an environmental and human health advocate, researcher, and director of ZeroGeoEngineering.com and 05G.com. That's spelled Z-E-R-O, and then the word geoengineering. Same with 05G, Z-E-R-O, 5G.com. Thank you so much for being on In Other News.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been a pleasure. Appreciate it.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again next Monday, 11 p.m. Visit inothernewsradio.com for an archive of shows and more information about the guests.